Liz Loza, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planters, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. Do you know what satisfied me today? I'm going to tell you, not that Mitchell Trubisky is no longer, I'm going to guess, the Bears starting quarterback, or that he, as my fantasy damage pick, did not come through, but that the Chicago Bears are 3-0. And I'm also satisfied by the Atlanta Falcons' ability to always lose, even when there is a chance, a 98% chance, that they should be winning. Matt, what satisfied you?
I mean, Liz, I'm satisfied by your ability to set up a win-win-win scenario for yourself today, because if Trubisky had gone out and played well, it's like, yeah, he was my fantasy freebie pick there. Let me take that victory lap. And obviously in that scenario, maybe the Bears win or whatever. But I mean, if Trubisky blows it, as he is wont to do, and then Foles gets in there, then Foles is your guy and the Bears win that way. It's like, either way, things are coming up Loza for no matter what here. So that's some good work right there.
I mean, I will never forget that when the alert came on my phone that Nick Foles had been signed to the Bears was the same day I was able to find canned beans at the grocery store in the beginning of Core. He is a harbinger of all the good things to come. I can feel it. All right. Let's talk about stuff that satisfied. You have been, I don't want to say you've been a Josh Allen truther, because you're better than that. You're not a truther. You're not just some guy on the internet like spitting out hot takes, but we have to talk about the Rams at Buffalo.
Maybe.
I'm trying to lift you up here, buddy. Bad Josh Allen made his first appearance of the season today in the second half, but he managed to pull off the win thanks to a PI call, which I had to think, by the way, I was like, oh, Michael Gallup knows what this call is like. Like, isn't this just like PI karma a little bit?
Yeah, the universe equaling things out there for the Rams on that one. No, I mean, this is all part of the Josh Allen experience. It's all part of the Josh Allen analysis, is that no one is saying, you know, and I'm not saying that like Josh Allen's going to be a top five quarterback or be this, you know, great player or whatever. But the point here is that the margin for error has so greatly increased for the Buffalo Bills quarterback because of the personnel that's put around him, because of the way that they're calling plays. That is clearly all come together for this 2020 season, so that the times when Josh Allen does things that it's just like, oh my God, what the hell was that? And I mean, those are always going to be a part of the experience. Like, he's always going to have those, I think Evan Silva put it, very memeable throws. And like that's going to get shared across the timeline, whatever. But at the same time, now we have so much more positive in this offense because of the players around him in the system, that those plays are not only worth, they're not only worth living through, they're also minimized overall because the offense is that explosive.
When you're talking about his pass-catching weapons, obviously Stephon Diggs has been the big story over the past 2 weeks, and he remained very, very relevant. But I should note, or we should note, that John Brown did leave this contest with a calf injury. He'd been struggling with a foot injury for more than a minute. But, you know, if we are going to skew positively, which I know you and I both like to do, find the silver lining, it is absolutely Gabriel Davis, who we talked a little bit about last week. 6'2", adds some nice height to this receiving core, undrafted free agent signing. And he caught all four of his balls for 81 yards. Gorgeous. I believe it was a 35-ish yard completion where he got his toes in. It'll end up on a highlight reel. It's already on Twitter. So, you know, if Brown were to miss any significant time, I think Davis obviously gets a bump here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, this is a unit that, it was encouraging that in the first half, you know, Diggs, I mean, he had what could have been a touchdown had Allen not kind of bunny hopped it to him. He also had another touchdown called back. But at the same time, from a, you know, bottom line perspective, Diggs and Brown were blanked at the box score in the first half. And it was still an overall positive day for the Bills offense, especially, like I said, in that first half where they drop a 3-touchdown hammer. That's good news for the entire offense when your two best players are not making a big impact, but you're still making plays.
Devin Singletary continued to make plays. Remember, there was no Zach Moss in this one, but Singletary rushed 13 times for 71 yards, plus he caught 4 catches for an additional 50 yards. Moving forward, the problem with Singletary, right, and the reason when you're talking about depth, and we talked about this on our halftime show, the thing that we're so impressed by or with in Buffalo is not just Dable, but the ability of the entire franchise to know where its limitations are, right? So you see Devin Singletary get stuffed at the goal line and you're like, oh, I get why they added Zach Moss.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, this was a very good example of why this guy didn't get goal line carries last year, doesn't get goal line carries this year either. So, but at the same time, the usage for Singletary was great, and yep. from a bottom line perspective, good game overall. So as long as Moss remains absent, then, I mean, yeah, Singletary is going to be a very strong high-end RB2 type of guy.
All right, new Rams rule, two pass catchers will pop. But you don't know which two. Cooper Kupp, 9-10 for 107 and a touch. Robert Woods, I mean, I did not think that this was possible, but 5 for 74 and a touchdown. But it was Tyler Higbee who, after scoring or managing a hat trick last week, found the short end of the stick this week. Just two targets, two catches, 40 yards.
I saw our friend Matt Waldman on Twitter make the joke that maybe Sean McVay is able to memorize his entire playbook because 80% of them are screens. And yeah, I mean, when you're running that type of layup offense, you're not necessarily gonna be popping it off enough to have like three pass catchers go crazy, as you mentioned. So I think that's probably good. I think that's good analysis by you. Like, in general, I think this offense has gotten to a point where it's rebounded enough that, yeah, we can start to say, hey, this is, you know, we're trusting these players more often than not. But I don't think we're at the point with the Rams offense where we're just throwing everybody in the pool no matter what. I mean, the backfield is sort of the same way, although right now it looks like Daryl Henderson has seized control. I don't know that we're still going to be saying that 3 weeks from now. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. But since Cam Akers' rib injury helped clarify things because there was one less body to take account of. So you mentioned it. Henderson rushed 20 times for 114. He managed a touchdown. Malcolm Brown also not completely out. He's got a broken pinky. And everyone's like, oh, the goal line back has a pinky problem? That's not a big deal. And I was like, well, I mean, you need hands if you're a running back, especially if you're the assumed goal line option. He was obviously the backup. Now, again, I think your point, you've made this since the summer, frankly, is that this is going to be a carousel when all three backs are healthy. And we don't know what it's going to be. But as you said last week, and I agreed, we're going to have to try to project based on health and matchup which one of these guys is going to pop, because the running back position remains incredibly thin and there are injuries even more we're going to get to a little bit later. But for now, Daryl Henderson is the guy. We'll see what happens. Let's move on to Las Vegas at New England, because running backs on both sides of this matchup surprised in very different ways. Rex Burkhead, you know, crowd surfed basically into the end zone. One of the two times he found the end zone, six carries for 49 yards and two tubs, plus seven catches for 49 yards and a third touchdown on 10 targets. So I'm sorry, he also pulled off a hat trick, two on the ground and one via the air.
Yeah, Rex Burkhead. I love that. Oh, God. Like, all day I kept thinking about that user question we got on FFL where, like, I basically laughed at somebody for, like, throwing in Joe Mixon with a group of goofballs that included Rex Burkhead. Burkhead, like you mentioned, goes crazy. Of course, Joe Mixon, we know the story there. There's just nothing good happening.
Did not go crazy.
I mean, you're going crazy if you drafted Joe Mixon at the end of round one, I'll tell you that. But, yeah, I don't know that I... Burkhead, though, he's involved last week, too. So he might be somebody that we, with James White out, you know, that we continue to look at, however long that's going to last. I mean, Sony Michel, 9 carries, 117 yards. I don't care. I don't think I'll be recommending to chase that anywhere.
100%. Josh Jacobs, though, after having a monster game last Monday night, dealing with a bit of a hip injury, a hip issue, did stay on the field. But New England, obviously, a very tough matchup, and he did not produce near the same level. But again, I'm not worried, assuming that the hip issue does not become larger. This is also a player who, I believe, from week 7 through the rest of the year, managed to play through a shoulder injury.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders right now, they're such an interesting team.
There's a lot of banged up players at the Raiders right now, though, too.
Yeah, they're very banged up. They're also like a very physical bunch. You know, they were giving Cam Newton the business early in this game. I mean, eventually the Patriots pulled away and it was just clear that the Cam Newton-led Patriots are a much better team than the Raiders. But, well, maybe a much better team is kind of aggressive, though. I don't know if I necessarily believe that. Like, I'm still not quite sure where I am with the Raiders. You know, like Sunday Night Football is on right now. But coming off that Monday night game with the Saints and the Raiders, I kept saying I couldn't figure out if the Saints are just much worse than I expected them to be, or the Raiders are much better, or a little bit of both, whatever. So I'm still kind of trying to figure out this Raiders team. But I do know that they need some more players to consistently emerge outside of Darren Waller, who gets kind of, you know, we assume gets taken out of the game by Bill Belichick. That's the reason he doesn't have a big line in this one. Obviously, Josh Jacobs in the running game. But other than that, they need somebody else to sort of consistently step up. Hunter Renfrow had popped up out of nowhere for a big game. So I'm sure he's on Bill Belichick's like radar. You know, when is Hunter Renfrow going to be a free agent? You know,
Well, I mean, he has a type. He fits a certain
exactly.
mold.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brian Edwards, who has not been a fantasy contributor, but has been a real life football contributor, he did leave this contest banged up, and they did not have the speedster Henry Ruggs. So you're right. I am impressed, though, with the ability. Similarly, you make a good point to the Patriots to utilize these lesser known players to advance, mm-hmm. it doesn't help fantasy managers much, but to like advance the score and stay in the game. To that end, just if we're going to talk about the Patriots, N'Keal Harry, remember all last year he had an ankle issue, and he also I believe he tweaked his ankle as well. So that's something to keep an eye on, because if we're going to say the same thing about the Raiders and you're looking at this receiving core and you're like, well, I need someone other than Waller to do the thing, then the Patriots need someone other than Julian Edelman, who is admittedly quiet in this game, to also do the thing. And if Harry is continually banged up and James White isn't available, then you're looking at like Damir Bird. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. I mean, at some point you'd think that the Patriots' lack of skill position players would start to bang them, but not so much with Rex Burkhead going God mode in this week.
I love God mode. All right. San Francisco at New York Giants. If we're talking about teams that are dealing with a lot of injuries, It is just, but again, like let's be a little bit optimistic. Your guy, and you can take the victory lap because you're too humble to do that on the Twitters. Brandon Ayuk took advantage of both Debo and Kittle sitting out, and Jordan Reed, who we talked about on the halftime show, left with an injury. Ayuk showed off that yak ability that you talked about, that we both talked about all summer. 5 of 8 targets for 70 yards, and he added 31 rushing yards on a touchdown. It was he ran in the touchdown. So are we thinking about Ayuk moving forward, or are we waiting until, you know, Kittle's going to be back and Debo should be back soon-ish? And, you know, is it more of a depth issue than something fantasy managers can rely on consistently just yet?
I definitely think he's worth grabbing, because this is exactly the vision that Kyle Shanahan probably had for this player when he drafted him, you know, getting him involved on the ground, getting him involved in the after catch game. And, you know, with the Debo injury and with the Kittle injury, it obviously just, he gets pushed to the front of the line, and that's not the way it's going to look every single week. But at the same time, you know, this is a good offense. It's a good situation. I know, like, we're on the 49ers section, but I'm so disgusted with the Giants after this game. Like, I want to just put the entire Giants, like, franchise out to sea. I don't want to try to figure out the backfield. I don't want to stream Daniel Jones. I don't want to talk about, is this a Darius Slayton week? Is this a Golden Tate week? I mean, God, you lose to the 49ers, like, C team. I mean, if there was a preseason in 2020, then, I mean, no, sorry, you didn't even get lose. You got taken to the woodshed by the 49ers C team. There's a preseason this year, and Nick Mullins, Jeff Wilson, Brandon Ayuk, Kendrick Bourne are all out there in the third quarter of a preseason game. You'd be like, yeah, that checks
that
out.
Looks it. Yeah.
checks out. No, but this is the team that beat the Giants damn, you know, by multiple scores. I mean, that's a tough, tough look for the ultra-discipline, lap-running, fighting Joe Judges in New York.
Well, Daniel Jones only had 179 yards, in case you want the numbers to match what Matt is referring to. Despite this being a pass-heavy game script, he had an interception. None of the three running backs did anything of note. So, you know, it looks like the Giants and the Jets are sharing some energetic DNA here.
Yeah, I know, right? If the Jets weren't such a clown show on, you know, quote, the other side of town or whatever, yeah, I think I feel like it might be worse here for the Giants. But this is just a tough look to be completely, you know, wiped off the board by a team. And like, we didn't even talk about, obviously everybody knows that the 49ers are banged up on the other side of the ball too.
Right.
Richard Sherman's not out there. Bosa's not out there.
There's no secondary. I mean, there's no pass rush. So what's the problem?
What are we doing here?
Right.
Giants?
Like, the only thing you could probably say is like, well, Evan Engram probably wouldn't have a good game. Cause what's left of the defense, right? Like for the 49ers.
Like the middle of it.
So fine. Yeah. You can blank Evan Engram, but, oh, and you know, Andy and I, when we did last week's show of fantasy forecast, however many words is the title of our new podcast,
the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast
podcast
special program,
very succinct.
Brett's pissed.
Darius Slayton is someone that Daniel Jones always looks to when things break down, but he also has to, like, I don't know, like, stay kind of on target. Like, he's not, Slayton can't, like, he doesn't have, you know, jet boosters in, on his back or anything.
So. Yep, correct. Can confirm he does not.
He does not. All right, so Washington at Cleveland. The sound you hear right now, if you listen closely, just give it a moment. Those are OBJ's wide receiver one hopes circling the drain. 4 catches, 59 yards, 6 targets, even. With all of the talent on that offense, the Browns look like they're going to stick to a backfield heavy game plan. Also, we shouldn't be surprised because Kevin Stefanski was mic'd up when he said he wants to run the ball up the opposition's tuchus. He didn't say tuchus, though.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I get this is the plan that the Browns have, you know. Training wheels on Baker. Don't let him screw things up. Don't let him run himself off the rails, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this is the in games where we can expect the Cleveland Browns to be competitive, win or control the action. Yeah, this is the team that they want to be. And that's not conducive to Beckham's fantasy value. And it's, I mean, Jarvis Landry, like, is this a guy, him, Austin Hooper, all these guys, are they even worth rostering at this point?
Well, I would hang on to Austin Hooper one more week because I believe the Browns play the Cowboys next week. I don't have my notes in front of me on that, but I believe the Browns play the Cowboys next week. And I think that the linebacking core obviously is a spot of vulnerability for the Cowboys. So if Baker is allowed to, like, not cook necessarily, but like saute,
yeah, then I mean, maybe microwave. Maybe if he's feeling really good, you let him put a couple Pop-Tarts in the toaster oven. Maybe.
Oh, wow. Pop-Tarts. Delish. But what I will say is that for everyone who complained about Nick Chubb, and he is definitely overvalued. Oh, my goodness. You can't draft Nick Chubb because of Kareem Hunt. Yo, there's enough for both of these dudes. And also, Nick Chubb remains one of the best pure rushers in the damn league. He rushed 19 times for 108 yards and 2 touchdowns. Kareem Hunt also found the end zone. He's the pass catching back, and he is a red zone. He is, I guess, the preferred option on passing downs in the red area of the field of these two running backs. So I feel like when we talk about, oh, God, this is a headache to project, this isn't too much of a headache.
Yeah. Again, I think in games like this, you want to play both of these guys because we've seen the ceiling. We've seen the floor. The only thing we got to worry about, and, you know, I don't have the Browns schedule up in front of me either, but you're right. They do play the Cowboys next week. That's going to be a tough one to think about. Like, I could easily see Dallas shredding their defense, you know, because their defense is not very good, the Cleveland Browns, other than, right, like Myles Garrett. You know, we're not exactly cooking with gas here. So, like,
but if you think about the Cowboys offensive line and the pressure that Garrett can get, then maybe.
True.
I don't know. I think you can project the first half of that game. The second half is anybody's guess, right? Like,
that's pretty fair.
That's when things are going to go sideways. But I will say, for everyone complaining about OBJ, I mean, you got him at such a low ADP. And the reason you drafted him was because of his big play potential, which he has flashed. He did flash it, admittedly, against the Bengals last Thursday night. Mm-hmm. But that's why you drafted him where you drafted him. He's a ceiling play. You didn't draft him because you thought he was going to be a high volume play. So manage your own damn expectations, which is something Philadelphia Eagles fans need to do. Ooh, I mean, I don't even know where to start with Carson Wentz. We talked about it a little bit on the halftime show. I mean, he obviously struggled early, but then also often in this one, just 29 completions for 47 pass attempts, one touchdown, two picks. You said very astutely on our halftime show that one of the good things that Philadelphia and Doug Peterson have managed to create was an excellent running game. I just don't think when we did that segment or that show, you were talking about the quarterback as also, you know, the RB2 on the team.
Right. This actually, if you want to skew positive, seeing Carson Wentz take off 9 times for 65 yards and a touchdown, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of what you need to see. But Wentz, like in 2017, when he was a great fantasy quarterback and obviously the leading candidate for the MVP before he went down with an injury, you know, part of what made him so special was his rushing ability. That hasn't been present at all through 2 games to start this year, and really wasn't much of a factor last year either. So that certainly can boost his floor from a fantasy perspective. But again, that's trying real hard. Might be throwing my back out a little bit on that reach. But in general, bad vibes here for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I mean, Dallas Goedert too. He gets hurt in this one. We think he's coming back, and then he doesn't. And now it looks like he's going to miss multiple weeks. And I mean, at some point, if you're Philadelphia, you got to just be like, are we already taking a mulligan on the 2020 season? Because they've just had so many injuries. But, you know, just at some point, you'd also like to see Carson Wentz elevate some talent around him at some point.
So there's a lot there, a lot of cogent analysis there. Goddard, you're right, might miss multiple weeks with that ankle injury. You also have Jalen Reagor out until week 9-ish with a thumb issue. DeSean Jackson, here's a surprise, left the game with another surprise hamstring issue. So there's going to be a lot of Miles Sanders and Zach Ertz in this one. So we are expecting to see exactly what you just said. The difference, though, is that a couple of years ago, it felt like Wentz was this improvisational genius who extended plays, but wasn't just rushing out of pure damn desperation.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It was like a part of the offense, not so much just like, well, nothing is happening, and so this is what I have to do. I mean, it's just really bad in Philly right now. I don't know how you're feeling. Let's just say one thing we can definitely say after week 3, and maybe we should have said it a long time ago. Let's take the Dak Wentz debate and shoot it into the sun, okay? Yeah. I don't care that the supporting casts are obviously like light years apart. We don't need to talk about that debate any longer.
Vanya Hargraves shooting them into the moon. That's an Umbrella Academy reference for anyone who doesn't watch. But we should talk about the Bengals because, if I'm a Bengals fan, I'm feeling mixed, not because of the Joe Mixon issue necessarily, but yes, you have an outstanding young quarterback. You can't protect him for anything, but the rookie connection between he and T. Higgins, the A.J. Green replicant, definitely rang true. You know, we knew that there was going to be an eventual passing of the torch between Higgins and Green, and we talked about it over the past 2 weeks. There's no denying that Green has been out of sync. Higgins now, maybe that was, I mean, Darius Slay was covering Green, so I'm not going to say that it wasn't, that didn't factor in. But Higgins found the end zone twice. I feel like we just saw it happen, the baton passing.
Yeah, that could easily be the case. I mean, because this offense right now, it still is the case. I mean, obviously, like from a bottom line perspective, the numbers look really good for Joe Burrow. And I mean, he's played well, like to his credit, he's played very well. But at the same time, it's been a very condensed offense. Like they've been pretty much just over the middle, short stuff, whatever. You would think at some point that, you know, it's because they haven't really found that connection with A.J. Green and Joe Burrow yet. And I think you could argue this 2 ways coming into week 3. It's like, oh, but all the air yards, all the targets, those will regress positively into something that's going to be great for fantasy football. Or the Bengals are going to look at that and be like, yeah, we might need to start changing some things up because whatever we're trying to do with A.J. Green right now, it's really not working. I start to, you know, we got to obviously go back and watch more, see like the routes run, snap share data, yada, yada, yada. But like that, maybe that's what we saw here in week three, T. Higgins starting to eat into AJ Green a little bit there.
It would also maybe if you want to stick to if your line can't protect your quarterback, you got to help him get the ball out as fast as possible, which might mean folding Mixon into the passing game a little bit more. But as for the air yards and being able to stretch the field, the Bengals do host the Jaguars in week four. And we just saw on Thursday night what Fitzmagic was able to do to Jacksonville. So I think that that is a great opportunity to try to implement some new things. If you look at that matchup. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Chicago Bears at the Atlanta Falcons. It took 2.5 weeks. Why? But Nick Foles came in for Trubisky and did Nick Foles things, putting up 3 touchdowns. I think this is good news for Bears receivers. Allen Robinson, 123 yards and a touchdown, finally on 10 catches, 13 targets, played him in DFS, felt really great. Jimmy Graham, you know what? I got to tell you something. Well, I have an answer for you. Scrunchies and Jimmy Graham. The question, 2 things back from the 90s, baby. 2 touchdowns and 6 catches.
Jimmy Graham wasn't not that old.
I mean, I'm just, of course, not that old, but I'm just trying to, like, the 90s are back. I did see someone on Twitter, I think it was Fantasy Pros, tweeted that this was the first multi-touchdown game that Graham had since 91. But obviously that may or may not have been facetious and certainly wasn't as a pro. Regardless, it's nice to see Graham back.
I was born.
1991.
Yeah.
Same year. Get your caboodle, baby. It's back. And yeah, so are the Bears. Happening. They are 3-0. I should say that it looks like, sadly, Tariq Cohen probably tore his ACL. And so he is expected to not come back for the rest of the season. You know, for me, there's not, like, David Montgomery remains an RB2, low-end RB2 based on the matchup here. Anthony Miller is still a flex or a wide receiver 3. Allen Robinson is a top 12, top 10 play. I kind of like that the Bears, like, there aren't a lot of question marks here. We know who we're starting and who we're not.
Yeah, I do. That's one thing that I've always really liked about this Bears offense in theory is that, the usage tree is pretty shallow here. Yeah. Like, it's pretty much just these. And I mean, hey, Jimmy Graham, like, does continue to be involved. So maybe whether he's just, you know, a ghost of himself or, you know, the relic of some bygone era, he's still out there, you know, making plays. So good for him. But at the same time, like, this is the thing with Foles, right? I think that the Bears could have gone a variety of different directions with their quarterback position this offseason. You know, everyone's going to say Cam Newton was out there. And I mean, I don't think you can really say it enough. Right. But, like, the thing with Foles versus Trubisky, when you're just looking at that, like, Trubisky definitely has moments, and he's definitely had moments the first couple of weeks where the offense has looked okay. But Foles is aggressive, where Trubisky is not a very aggressive passer. And Foles will move the offense in good ecosystems. And I think this is a pretty good ecosystem here in Chicago. Like, they have players. Miller has had some drop issues. He dropped another touchdown today, whatever. But by and large, it's been a positive season for him. Robinson obviously is a great player. And, you know, I think that, you know, in totality, this offense will be better with Foles in it than it will with Trubisky. And I don't know that there's really a need to belabor that point too much.
I certainly think we're fine in terms of the division when you've got the Vikings going, 0-3, I believe, and you know, the Lions finally won one. So the Packers remain the most heated competition. But we just should talk about the Falcons because obviously there was no Julio Jones today, which meant a lot for Calvin Ridley, 110 yards on 5 catches, 13 targets, his 3rd straight 100-yard game so far this season. Russell Gage, though, just 2 catches for 26 yards before he left the game with a concussion. But here is what I find the most alarming, if you will, about the Falcons. Hayden Hurst found the end zone so great. Just one look, one catch, and it happened to be, you know, the highest value option. So fantastic. Todd Gurley, even with the team slot receiver Russell Gage leaving the game, had 2 targets, caught 1 ball. That is very concerning. Brian Hill, who outpaced Todd Gurley, also only caught 1 ball for 20 more yards and drew 2 more targets. I'm sorry, 1 more target. Brian Hill is getting more work in the passing game with the damn slot receiver not in it. That, to me, you know, this is our assumption about Todd Gurley heading into this season was like, oh, maybe he's not going to be as explosive, but the volume would be there, especially when you fold in his opportunities in the passing game. I mean, if Julio Jones is out and Russell Gage is out and Todd Gurley draws two damn looks, I'm worried.
I mean, I don't know how you couldn't be worried. There hasn't been much hope for Gurley as a pass catcher really since that 2018 season. Last year, he was a dud in the pass game as well. And I mean, Brian Hill, this is just if you're very forward thinking, you've had him on your bench already because you could smell blood in the water when it comes to Todd Gurley. If you still want to be forward thinking, you want to grab him now just in case something does happen to Gurley, because I think Hill has shown he's an all right player, and this offense is moving. No matter who's in there, you know, they're still moving pretty well, even if the Falcons are like just. I mean, what an unbelievable team, the Atlanta Falcons. How are they real? Have they done this? How did they do this 2 weeks in a row?
Brian Hill, to Matt's point, is rostered in just 2% of Yahoo leagues. And for what it's worth, in college, he only had 5 career fumbles. So we know that he can hold on to the ball. Let's move on to Houston at Pittsburgh. James Conner, 18 carries for 109 yards and a touchdown on the ground, plus 4 catches for another 40 through the air. Any concerns about Benny Snell? I mean, I did see some nonsense on Twitter about, like, Benny Snell better than James Conner? Enough. Like, we see what's going on here. Ben had 237 passing yards and 2 touchdowns, one to Eric Ebron, who I just... Yeah, of course. Great. And of course, Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, Deontay Johnson had a concussion and left this game, didn't come back. He tweeted after the game that he's fine. Okay, cool, whatever. We'll see. This was about how I expected this game to go. And if you're, I mean, from the Steelers' perspective, they definitely do. I think they need Johnson out there, for as much as guys like James Washington and Chase Claypool are big play options, and both of those guys, you know, did make a mark today. James Washington had a bad drop. Claypool had a 24-yard catch, but you know, those guys are decent 3 and 4 receivers. I think they need Johnson as a clear starter out there. He's going to make a difference with that offense. James Conner, though, it's like, man, if you panicked about James Conner after week one and, like, you know, you added Benny Snell, blew a bunch of your fab on him or whatever, like, this is, you're feeling like, whew, after these last 2 weeks, because it has gone very well for James Conner since then. Like, now it's looking like all the preseason analysis of, like, well, if he stays healthy, he's a bell cow on a really good offense. That's all good. Houston. Yikes.
Well, I mean, David Johnson did save his stat line with a touchdown, but otherwise.
Yeah. Where are we at with the whole David Johnson thing? Because, like, I mean, he looks great. Like, legitimately looked great week one against the Kansas City Chiefs. People are starting to kind of be like, oh, should we have really, you know, buried David Johnson so early? Then, you know, kind of pretty not so great games back-to-back weeks, but pretty tough opponents too in the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers. What would be your kind of lean with David Johnson after these last 2 weeks?
Well, isn't this similar to what we saw last season? I mean, the matchups notwithstanding, like, let's divorce that for a second, a hot start, and then there is a slowing up. And also, anyone who has watched David Johnson play knows that what he does best is not, like, he's not a north-south guy who's a between-the-tackles grinder. That's not how he is best utilized. He's best utilized in the passing game. He's best utilized, you know, when he wants to bend the edge, if you will. Like, and he's not being utilized in the way that most effectively fits his skill set. I mean, bro drew 3 targets. He had 2 catches for 23 yards. And you've got a banged up Brandon Cooks in this one. You don't have DeAndre Hopkins. Duke Johnson, another pass catching running back, isn't in this one. So what are you doing with David Johnson? Why aren't you using him in these short yardage situations and having him catch out of the backfield? I don't understand it. I mean, the answer is like, well, we have Randall Cobb. Well, great.
I mean, no, yeah, I think that is that's the biggest problem so far for Johnson, is that there hasn't been any receiving usage, and Houston has been consistently in negative game script. Right. You know, like they've been trailing. You would think that this is when he would catch passes, but that has not happened yet to this point. So, I mean, we'll see. I think that things could get better for Johnson in this whole offense when the schedule lightens up, because this is just a brutal start. I mean, I don't mind dunking on the Texans, because I think they sort of kind of deserve it for the way they've set this team up. But at the same time, too, pretty brutal start to go Chiefs, Ravens, Steelers.
Where do you stand on Will Fuller? Who did find the end zone. Yeah. I mean, I had him projected for like 2 catches and 30 yards, and he went 4 for 54, but he managed to find the end zone. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know what you're kind of getting when you get into the Will Fuller. Well, I mean, I think you know it's going to be either, you know, it's going to be really good or really bad. I think that it was a mistake if anyone thought he was going to, you know, become an every week predictable starter just because DeAndre Hopkins is gone. That's doing the all of these targets are available, this player will slide into, like, players aren't numbers on a spreadsheet. And I mean, Houston's offense, when it was DeAndre Hopkins on one side of the field and Will Fuller on one side of the field and Deshaun Watson as the quarterback, obviously, that's a really tough unit to defend, because you have to like choose which poison to drink. Are you going to double DeAndre Hopkins, who needs that sort of attention because he's that type of guy? Well, great. Then you have Will Fuller running go routes on single coverage against people who can't work, people who can't work with him. Now the offense is much harder to defend, is much easier to defend when you're talking about, well, I guess we'll just take our medicine with like Randall Cobb underneath, or, you know, maybe LOL Brandon Cooks will do something. Probably not.
Right. I think that's it. And I also think, though, that theory over the summer of Will Fuller being like a high volume option carried over into week one when he saw double digit targets against Kansas City. Like, yeah, it's a different thing, right? Let's talk about Tennessee at Minnesota, because, I mean, I don't mind the Vikings losing again. I believe there was someone who said something about survival of the fittest, so let's go with that. But we should talk about rookie Justin Jefferson, who was a first-round pick, and we've been waiting for one of these rookies to pop and do something of note, and he ended up on the COVID list, and then BC Johnson theoretically beat him out, and everyone was like, oh, well, this kind of sucks. But we saw the breakout happen. I'm going to call it a breakout. 7 of 9 for 175. You think, oh, that's a lot of targets. One was a 75-yard touchdown, and he had 2 other catches over 30 yards, which you don't really expect from a slot receiver.
Yeah, I'm going to go breakout on this one too,
yeah,
because this team just so badly needs extra juice. I mean, I don't care if Justin Jefferson, you know, had a bad camp or whatever. There were reports that, you know, he was consistently running with the twos, wasn't making a big impact, whatever.
Don't matter now.
You need players, and you need them really bad, because that is Adam Thielen is one of the leaders in target share through 2 weeks, but it's just 8 targets in back-to-back games. Like, I mean, I know that the coaching staff is going to sit here and drool over their yards per carry again this week, just like they were coming into this game. That's great. You're still losing. You can't play football that way when your defense is one of the, and I'm being generous here when I say this, one of the 15 worst units in the NFL. And again, that is ultra, ultra generous. The Vikings defense got going a little bit today when Taylor Lewin left the game, the left tackle for the Tennessee Titans, and then Yannick Ngakoue just beat up on Ty Sambrelu, who shouldn't be playing left tackle in the NFL anyways, and certainly should not be starting left tackle in the NFL. So, you're looking at a defense that still has a long, long way to go, and I don't necessarily know that there's like a light at the end of the tunnel, so they need some other passing game guys to step up, whether it was going to be Irv Smith or Justin Jefferson. It looks like Jefferson is the answer here. I'm going to call it a breakout, and I think we're flying here.
All right, and you mentioned the running game. That's obviously one person. Dalvin Cook, 22 carries, 181 yards, 1 touchdown. He did leave a little bit banged up or was a little bit limping, but he seems to be fine. Derrick Henry, 26 carries, 119 yards, and his first 2 touchdowns of the year. We expected this was going to happen against the defense that you just mentioned in Minnesota. He remains a stud. We can move on. We're going to talk about the afternoon slate now. Carolina at the Chargers. The Justin Herbert experience has been mixed, right?
Like, yes.
The switch to Herbert is what you were hoping for if you drafted Austin Eckler, 12 carries, 59 yards, and a rushing touchdown. And then he caught all 11. We love double digits of his targets for 80 yards. Doubled. So that was great. And then Keenan Allen, 19 targets, 13 catches, 132 yards, and a touchdown. We should also mention, however, that Mike Williams was banged up and on the sideline for this one.
Yeah, pretty predictable storyline. Like, this is the Chargers offense that looks much more like the 2019 version of the Chargers offense. You know, I think it was disappointing to see Josh Kelly really take a step back in this one. Like, if you were, you know, Austin, if you're like me and you think Austin Eckler is one of the best backs in the NFL, like the perfect version of a modern day NFL running back, this is the sort of usage that you expected from these two guys. And especially, I think, like, if the Chargers are able to get a lead and control the game, like they were shockingly against Kansas City, I think Kelly's going to be involved. But if they're trailing to, or, you know, in a negative game script against a team like the Panthers, which is, it's really weird
wild
to say. Like,
yeah. Wild.
Especially in LA. I mean, it's the new stadium, whatever. Then you're obviously going to see a lot more of Eckler. But yeah, I mean, Justin Herbert, like, if you drafted Keenan Allen or Austin Eckler, this guy's like, you're like, put the poster up on the wall. Like, he throws to these guys 30 times. Keenan Allen draws 19 freaking targets. I mean, I think at this point now, if Allen is on your team, as long as Herbert is starting, which looks like it's going to be maybe the rest of the season, at least for the foreseeable future with whatever's going on with Tyrod Taylor. I think you're set. You're look back at like, okay, I have Keenan Allen. He's a wide receiver one. I start him every week and I don't think twice about it.
Less predictable for me, at least, maybe you saw it coming, was Mike Davis's usage. I filled in admirably for CMC, 46 rushing yards, 45 receiving yards and a touchdown. Not the easiest matchup. Are you feeling confident enough to flex Davis? Again, like, we're not living in a vacuum. We have to recognize how many injuries there are to the running back position and how he is going to be on every, like, he is going to be asked about every single week during our start and sit questions.
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, 13 carries, most in the backfield. Reggie Bonifan got 2 carries. Curtis Samuel chipped in with 4 carries. But yeah, for the most part, it was definitely the Mike Davis show. The receiving usage is like almost exactly like 9 targets. I mean, they're gross targets. 5.6 yards per catch. Does find the end zone great. But still, I mean, I think you're looking at him as a low end RB2 in the flex consideration every week because of that volume. This, like, talk about something I did completely expect. This is exactly the Panthers offense that I expected to see, which is except the fact that they kind of stayed more competitive in this game. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of yards. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for this team, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of touchdowns. And yikes, was it? I mean, they scored 21 points with just one offensive touchdown. Their kicker, I think it's Joey Sly Joey Sly. Yeah, he's out there. By the way, kind of jacked for a kicker, Joey Sly is. he's like, you see him every now and again, like, guys got biceps. 5 for 5, kicks 5 field goals in this. Like, Carolina consistently got into the red zone and could not make it work. It was tough to watch the Panthers offense today. So yeah, that's the offense that Mike Davis is the guy in, you know. It's
and his usage in the passing game obviously gives him a nice floor that you're gonna take. By the way, they have the Cardinals next week. But if you want to talk about like hard to watch offenses, did you spend any time viewing the Jets at the Colts?
No.
Throw up, right? Cringe.
Yeah. No, just skip the Jets. Who cares?
Great.
I mean, Adam Gase's playbook must be just like, which white flag do I wave this week? You know, last week he's out, he's down 24-3 kicking field goals. This week he's out there, you know, down 31-7 or something like that, and he's out there running the ball. Give me a break. The Jets are not participating in the season. We don't need to talk about them.
Also, I believe 2 safeties in a row in consecutive games for a safety for each game consecutively for Sam Darnold. So bad look all around. Jonathan Taylor, though, 59 yards and a touchdown. Jordan Wilkins was on closeout duty here. He had 9 carries for 39 yards, but I'm not going to read too much into that. Nyheim Hines returned to fantasy relevance, 7 carries for 21 yards, 4 catches for 40 yards. I think the bigger story, there's a bunch going on here. Michael Pittman left this one a little bit banged up. We already know that Paris Campbell is done. So another one of these receiving options needs to step up, and it might very well be, even with Jack Doyle healthy, Mo Alie-Cox. And I don't know if you know this, but that guy played basketball back in the day.
Phillip Rivers has once made a lot of music with a former basketball player at tight end, Chargers Hall of Famer Antonio Gates. Wow. And I know a lot about Mo Alie-Cox. That's a Virginia guy. I'm all in on my Virginia players. VCU in Richmond. A guy was basketball, big time basketball player there. So yeah, for sure, I'm all in on the Mo Alie-Cox experience. I mean, I think that was one that just, like, I don't know how you put that toothpaste back in the. In the tube, you know, right. Too exciting. This offense needs some juice. That's pretty exciting. Disappointing that for T.Y. Hilton that the grandma pep talk only got him 3 targets, 3 catches, 52 yards. But the Jets really didn't put up much of a fight. So the Colts didn't really need to do too much.
Dallas at Seattle. This game had all of the things, right? Like I feel like this game had anything you and Dak was struggling early on. But he obviously had to turn to the passing game to keep up with Seattle. Zeke salvaged the day with a touchdown. He had just, 34 rushing yards otherwise. But what most excited me, I mean, I was really starting to think, like, all those Michael Gallup takes that I had just been confidently spitting out all week long were looking real bad. But the argument for Gallup was that when goes sideways, or when stuff goes sideways, it is Michael Gallup that Dak Prescott looks to in clutch situations. He is the guy who sets up key scoring efforts, and it was so nice for that analysis to work and for him to also get some of the glory. 6 for 138 and a touchdown. Some, I guess you could say fluky stuff about, like, the defender having the ball bounce off of him and then him catching it. But hey, that's presence of mind. That's focus. That's why Michael Gallup is clutch. Mark Cooper also went 9 for 86. CeeDee Lamb 5 for 65. We didn't have to deal with Dalton Schultz, thank goodness, in this one.
You had to deal with Cedric Wilson.
Oh, that too. That was the moment, though. When I saw that Wilson touchdown, I was like, oh no, these Gallup takes might be cold.
Yep. Yeah. No, I thought the same thing as well. But yeah, I mean, this is sort of, I think this is based on the usage we've seen so far. Like, Gallup is the guy in downfield situations he's going to be asked to win in those moments for the Dallas Cowboys. And that's going to be a little problematic because the blocking is not great, as we know. I mean, Zach Martin, the all-pro guard, shifts out to right tackle in this spot. And actually played pretty well. So maybe that's something that they think about doing on a more semi-permanent basis. But yeah, I mean, this is going to be the ride with Gallup. Like, against a weak secondary like Seattle, you want to use him because he's been getting the deep looks, continued to do so today. And yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'm going to be chasing Cedric Wilson, but this is the type of thing when this offense is cooking, ancillary players can step up. I am still like, man, why all the screens, Dallas? Like, I still have a little bit of, like, hesitation about the whole Mike McCarthy experience. And I know Kellen Moore still calling plays. Still, like, what are we doing with all the screens? Even on the last few moments, they're still trying to run screens with Ezekiel Elliott that, I mean, I'm sure they have, like, -3,000 EPA on those plays because they did not work at any point, and they kept on going back to it. I don't know what the thinking was there. But, yeah, pretty nice stat line overall for most of the Dallas Cowboys players.
And Russell Wilson's MVP campaign gets another boost. 5 touchdowns, 3 of them.
I mean, unbelievable. Yes,
there you go. Take it. Take the victory lap. 3 touchdowns to Tyler Lockett with 100 yards. Also, it's not like Metcalf didn't eat either, right? He scored the game-winning touchdown and led the team with 110 yards. The Evans-Godwin impression continues on the other side of the country here.
Yeah, I was all ready to have, like, DK Metcalf has a bad game in the don't care section of my care, don't care column. And I literally tweeted that. I was like, I can predict this is going in there. And then, the next moment he goes out and scores the long game winning touchdown. I mean, DK Metcalf has a legit bad game, Trayvon Diggs, the Cowboys' second round pick at cornerback, goes and pops that ball up, like when DK let up early going into the end zone. He lets one pass in a clutch moment slip through his hands. So his bad game gets you 4 catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown. So, yeah, I mean, overall, great game. This is what you think with these Seahawks. And your point about the Cowboys struggling to cover tight ends, maybe Austin Hooper next week. Harrison Bryant also scored for the Cleveland Browns today. So maybe Bryant messes up those Austin Hooper screaming calls. Greg Olsen, 6 catches. Six targets, 5 catches, 61 yards. There were definitely some times I'm like, man, they're letting old man Olsen get open this much in the middle of the field. That's not good.
Well, I mean, next week, the Seahawks, like I think I mentioned, are at Miami. I think that's going to be like a sneaky fun game. The only issue is that Chris Carson did leave this effort with an ankle issue, so we're not sure of his availability, in which case Carlos Hyde becomes a talking point.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Totally agree. I mean, you want a starting running back from this offense right now. And so if that's Carlos Hyde, yeah. I mean, this guy ran for 1,000 yards just last year.
No starting running backs from Detroit's offense, though. I don't know what DeAndre Swift... Like, this was the week that you decided to punish DeAndre Swift. That happened back in week one. I don't really understand it. But I don't even... Do you want to even talk about Detroit other than the fact that Kenny Golladay certainly changed the complexion of this offense, making it 1,000 times better, and he did find the end zone and much as a relief to fantasy managers who've been waiting on him.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal. And then TJ Hockenson has gone over 50 yards in 3 straight games, I think, is still someone that's sort of on that tight end radar as well. But yeah, no answers in the backfield. 22 carries for 75 yards for Adrian Peterson. Come on.
But Arizona, so we know what we're getting with the Detroit Lions, at least from a pass catching perspective, right? Like, it's Kenny Golladay. Do you feel comfortable flexing Marvin Jones anymore?
No, not really.
No, right? No. Like, I'm going to flex Anthony Miller, but I'm not going to spend the time on Marvin Jones anymore.
No, I'm with you on that one. No.
All right. So this wasn't Kyler's best game. 2 touchdowns, 3 picks, 270 yards in the air, but 29 yards and a rushing touchdown. He's so damn shifty. Like, I don't, you know, like we're saying, like, this wasn't a great game for him. And yet 3 touchdowns, I'll take it, you know, like 300 yards.
Yeah. Not a good game for him. I've got him in a fantasy league and he's got 24.7 points. So, I mean, yeah, if like he's still clearly an every week fantasy starter. And but he definitely made some mistakes in this one. I still think it's encouraging that the offense looks this good. DeAndre Hopkins looks this good. Andy Isabella might be giving Christian Kirk a little push for that, you know, number two receiver job or whatever. Scores 2 times in this one. People are freaking out about Kenyon Drake. And I partially get it. I mean, he's getting a lot of rushing work, but he's definitely losing reps to Chase Edmonds in the passing game. And really, like, there's not a lot of checking down to running backs anyways in this offense, because like Kyler's just gonna run it because he's one of the best runners in the NFL right now. So, but Kenyon Drake is a guy that I think if someone is freaking out in your league, I'd maybe make a, you know, I'd maybe poke around on that one a little bit.
Are you saying that you might make a trade offer?
Yes.
Okay, just to be clear. Yeah. Tampa Bay at Denver. Chris Godwin left this one with a hamstring injury, but he did put up 64 yards and a receiving touchdown. Scotty Miller, he came in, 3 catches, 83 yards. Who would you prefer to roster? Is it still Chris Godwin when comparing to Mike Evans?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little nervous now that he's like
that getting, hamstring thing, yeah.
Yeah, he's got the hamstring thing. So I would say that right now it would be Mike Evans, even though he has someone compared it to the Matt Asiata, I think, of like of fantasy lines for wide receivers. Two catches, 2 yards, 2 touchdowns. What? That's very strange. But still, yeah, I think right now I'd rather have Mike Evans. Hey, Gronk had 48 yards. Wow.
I did see that. I mean,
close to scoring a touchdown, too.
What about the backfield? You know, all over FFL, we were talking about how Leonard Fournette had decisively taken the job away from Ronald Jones. And he only carried the ball 7 times to Jones's 13. Jones only got 53 damn yards, but he did draw 4 targets in the passing game for 2 catches and another 20. Yuck. All of it is yuck. I don't... I really want there to be some clarity here just so that we can stop at answering questions about it.
Oh, Liz, you are speaking my language. Like, that's the only, I don't care one damn bit about Ronald Jones. I don't care one damn bit about Leonard Fournette. I just want to not think about it. Yeah. So that, yeah, if we could never get a Bucks running back question again, or like, just don't have a take. Okay. Like, it's okay to just not like be like, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with these running backs this week. But if you're like, if you're making a statement and then like another strong statement in your tweet about it, you're kidding yourself. No one knows.
And go ask that person, because I honestly also don't think that Bruce Arians knows heading into the game.
No, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The Broncos went down early, which meant very little rushing game work for Melvin Gordon, who only had 8 carries for 26 yards. Nothing really popped for this receiving core except Tim Patrick. There was talk that he would be with Courtland Sutton out and Jerry Jeudy, both young and a little bit banged up as well. There was an opportunity for Tim Patrick, who is obviously the veteran, especially in comparison to your guy, KJ Hamler. And Tim Patrick did. This is not the first time he has flashed. Like, we have seen this. There's like shades of like Dontrell Inman going on with the Tim Patrick experience in Denver. But is he someone that you're even considering rostering, or are you just like, I don't really want a piece of this whole Denver situation. I don't know how long. I kind of want to like step away from it, and I'd rather add someone, even if the usage isn't as consistent, just because it's more exciting, like Andy Isabella or like Justin Jefferson or like T. Higgins instead of Tim Patrick.
Yeah, no, I don't really feel too inclined to be emotionally or fantasy invested in this Broncos offense. I think every time I look at it, I'm just looking at the box score right here, and I've got to see names like Brett Rippon. And
it's Rippon. You know, I don't know, actually, no, if it's not
Rippon. I don't know, but yeah, Tim Patrick gonna be talking about these players. Like, we should be talking about Drew Lock and Courtland Sutton, and you know, these 10 targets for Noah Fant should be getting a lot more than 5 catches, 46 yards. Wow. It's just tough. I mean, I just feel nothing but sadness for the Broncos offense.
What a way to pander to our producer. Let's talk about Monday.
Well, I said we ripped on the podcast name earlier. We got to do something.
I know that we are both excited. If we are not at all excited for Denver, the inverse of excitement for that, this is not well stated. It's been a very long day. Anyway, we're excited for the Monday night game between the Chiefs and the Ravens. Any hot takes? What are you looking for? What are you keeping an eye on?
Play all the players, you know? That's what I would do. Should be fun.
Brilliantly stated. Which tight end would you prefer? Which tight end would you prefer in this one, Matthew? Would you prefer Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews? I actually think Mark Andrews has a chance to outproduce Travis Kelce.
I agree. We typically see the Chiefs give up on production to tight end. So yeah, sure, Mark Andrews, why not? Play him along with all the other players.
All right. Play all the players. That is the groundbreaking analysis from one Matt Harmon. Matt, you do have, as you mentioned every week, you file a piece, and it is Care, Don't Care. Can you remind everyone when that goes up and maybe tease it a little bit?
Yeah, I file it Sunday night. So if you're up late on the West Coast, you know, at like 10 p.m. Or you are a lunatic up past midnight on the East Coast, thanks for the support. Check out the article. It's probably going to, I have been gently nudged into the direction to cover the two Hall of Fame quarterbacks playing on Sunday Night Football with a potential Drew Brees angle in this one. So that will be the lead. I'll also talk a little bit about the Chargers, who we mentioned in the Don't Care segment. A few of the topics we've hit on this one should be a real winner.
Great. Well, podcasts are winners, and luckily for you guys, we have lots of them. You can check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor, and the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our friend Pat Forty. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz_FF. That's at Matt Harmon_BYB. One more thanks to Planters Andy will be back tomorrow morning to talk pickups. Until then, we're out.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. We want to cover the issues in the macro, global economics, the stock market, and our political climate. But we'll also cover the micro stories, maybe the ones you don't hear as much about in the news or the media. We hope you'll listen and be a part of the journey. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.